Hi everyone! Happy Jumma! Happy Friday! Hope you are all doing fantastic, or well, you know, as fantastic as you can with this really quite concerning COVID-19 situation. Guys, what the hell is going on? I mean, excuse my French, but I'm based in London, and the news are really worrying with this new variant. And you can't turn on the news without constantly being informed of the really tragically high death tolls. I mean, it's really quite emotional, but like, how do we get out of this situation? And how did we even get in? All these people talking about, I want to return back to my normal life. No, we need a new normal, but like new normal that is post-COVID. Because last time I checked, it was our previous normal that got us into this mess. So, you know, we don't want that and we don't want this. So, I'm just really worried, guys. I mean, there's so much to talk about when it comes to this. But I'm in London and we can't leave the house. We can't leave our local area. We can't go and see friends. There is really, I mean, it's quite close to house arrest, if I'm quite honest, but, you know, I'm not going to dramatize the situation further than what it already is. So, gosh. Okay, a bit of housekeeping. It's been a long hiatus here in the Muslim Takeaway community, as I'm sure some of you have noticed, of being away doing some really amazing, great stuff, such as postgraduate applications. Yes, so I've been trying to get back on my education. And so please do spare a dua, a prayer for me, because I would really love to move forward next year in a postgrad position where I can just follow my academic pursuits, but do so with scholarships. So, or one scholarship is enough, right? So yes, please, if you could make a prayer for me, I would so very much appreciate it. And I hope that God will also give you what you desire in your heart and what is the best for you. So like a mutual prayer is what we need right now during these really tough circumstances. But doing all that cool stuff, productive stuff, right, has meant that unfortunately I haven't been as consistent with producing these episodes. And that really bothers me because I love doing this. I love interviewing people within our own Muslim community. I love exchanging worldviews, opinions, biases. I want to know how you reached a certain perception on things and where did that stem from. I'm really interested to hear about all of it because I'm trying to facilitate conversations that would bring us together. I want to embrace and I want to cherish what makes us different, but also why that difference makes us so rich and colorful and diverse and how we can use it for our best benefit. I'm less interested, way less interested in hearing about how our dissimilarities make us XYZ and how we are so, like, you know, I'm not even gonna get into that. I don't want any of that negativity. Like, let's just put it aside. Let's take a breather. Right. Today, I will be bringing you a super eccentric, cute, quirky, but most importantly, a brilliant young woman. She's an activist. She's an artist. She's a bunch of different things. But she has a very special talent in expressing herself through art and colorful illustrations. So her name is Sahar Qureshi, and Sahar is a British-Iranian advocate for what she calls accurate representation of history and educating people through art. That's her calling. She has found her purpose. I support people who have a 2020 vision. I'm here for it. I'm going to support them. And that's that. So before we get started, I just want to thank everyone who has tuned in. So please do leave a review, give a thumbs up, whatever you can do on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please do follow us on Twitter. It's at Muslim Takeaway. And we welcome, when I say we, I genuinely mean me, because I run this show literally and figuratively. So if you have any suggestions to make, drop them in my Instagram, DM me or tweet me, whatever. I welcome it wholeheartedly. Really, I do. And if you want me to interview someone specific, someone who's quite prominent in the Muslim community, or someone who isn't prominent but has really good views and you would want them to be out there, let me know. I'm here for it. Let's go. Okay, Sahar, over to you. Take the podium. Tell us what you do, what you're all about. Take it away.
So I do, I guess, multi-mixed media, multidisciplinary art. I make videos, I direct, I illustrate, animate, I paint. I like designing interior. So it's a lot of things that I do, but for majority of my, online time or my, my digital work is a majority activism, I guess, and just recreating feelings of diaspora and nostalgia.
So what does art exactly mean to you, and how do you use it?
I really try and use my art as a form of education, because I think that's really underestimated sometimes. So it's something that I feel like is very important. I feel like when we were younger, this would have been something really interesting to look into and learn about and just be creative about what we learn. And I was like, okay, well, let me do it. Let me be a form of education for things that actually matter. So I guess what I try and do is shine light on the truth through creativity.
Sahar, as I'm sure you are all too familiar, there is this general consensus within Muslim/immigrant families that say, that want their offsprings to go out and become doctors, engineers, lawyers, jobs, professional career paths that have a guaranteed a job prospect, so to say. So give us a little bit of background to where were you born? What was your family like? How did you come to discover art?
So I was born in the UK. Basically, my dad used to live here for a long time. And then he went back to Iran and he met my mum. And then he brought my mum here to the UK. And then I was born, my brother was born, but my mum was just basically fresh from Iran and she didn't like it here. So we moved back. And then we came back when I was 10 because for school and stuff, because my dad was like, no, they need to learn English, better opportunities. So that's what we did.
He wasn't wrong, but the experience was probably quite difficult for you, especially because you were young.
Yeah, it was. The reason why we came back was because of my dad was not financially stable anymore, and obviously business in Iran is not as stable as a business would be here, and we went through some difficulties and we couldn't go back for a while. So I think that definitely affected my mental health, and when you're so attached to somewhere and so many people in your family, and then for you get taken away from them for 11 years, it's kind of whoa. And then you have to basically restart yourself. I was 9, super Iranian, super involved with Iran, my family. And then I came here and I had to basically teach myself the British accent, try and fit in as much as I could. I split myself into two different people. When I speak Farsi, people think, oh, she's so fresh. But then when I speak English, people are like, no, she can't. She probably can't speak Farsi that well. It's really strange. I've basically split myself down the middle.
Yeah, that's actually very relatable. I think a lot of immigrant kids could relate to that. I mean, you don't have to be Iranian. You can be British, definitely, anything, really. I have met people whose accents vary depending on who they speak with. And I'm actually one of them.
So that's literally
No, it's so true. I've noticed that with me and also a few of my really good friends. We almost unconsciously mimic the accent of the person we are speaking with. And it creates a great inconsistency, because then people that don't know you might think, oh, what is she doing now? Why is she pretending to be American? Or why is she pretending to be British? Or, oh my gosh, she sounds Australian. What's going on? It's like, we're not doing it on purpose.
Literally.
And so, but did you ever feel out of place?
I went to a very white school. I mean, there was a lot of, I guess, when I say white, it basically felt like that, because it felt like it was me and then everyone else. It was just the culture that was a clash for me. I couldn't relate to people. There was a lot of like discrimination and stuff, and we didn't really learn about the beauties of the world, you know. And I never really had like older Iranians, like kids here, like make me feel like, oh, my culture is beautiful. Because when I was younger, I hated it. Like, I actually disliked it so much. When in my 16s and 17s, I started to see the beauty myself, and I was like, no, I'm Iranian and I'm proud. And then, you know, after a couple of years, then you start to see this rise in minorities from all over the world embracing their cultures, and so many different Iranian platforms right now talking about different things. Like, it's so freaking amazing how we have that now. But before, when I was younger, it was definitely a struggle to kind of see the beauty within myself.
Yeah, and I suppose the rise of social media has also helped that, because more people have access to it and more people have a platform to tell their own tale, basically. And in many ways, you can build your own community online. I personally, I mean, this interview is not about me, but I grew up between kind of 3-4 countries. It's almost like there is migration, and there is twice migration, and there is 3 times migration. And I've someone who has migrated 3 times. And so for me, like when I hear your story or any immigration story, really, I really relate to that, because I feel like I've seen all aspects of it. You mentioned clash of cultures. Given that you were born in the UK and now you've spent your majority of time here, do you still feel like there is a clash of cultures, or do you feel like you have found the middle path where things align with each other, especially now that, you know, first of all, we live in London, but also the world has become so incredibly global, and you can literally just bring your own culture and still be who you are and still get your way through wherever you are?
I mean, the thing is, the cultures still do clash in a way, because even if, for example, the opportunities I've had here with to work with big businesses, it seems like they want to talk about your culture, and they seem like they understand it and care about it, but really they don't. But really, it's just to make themselves look like, oh, look, we care. When things like that happens, it definitely makes me feel like it's either being Iranian or being British. And then I feel the clash. I feel like the coldness, and then it's kind of like, I just want to go home. I want to go back. Like, this is not what I want. I've adapted to like the culture, I guess, but I have this mindset where I just turn it off and on. Like, okay, if I'm in a environment where I know there's going to be a lot of British folk, then okay, I will turn my Britishness a bit more higher. But if I know, like, okay, I'm in a setting where, you know, the aunties are around, my friends are around, I don't know, then obviously I'm more comfortable. Or if I'm with my Middle Eastern friends, I'm not afraid to be myself either. It's really strange, but I just bond like really well with, I think, minority groups, because we can relate to each other so well. I mean, bad things happen to me, or like I face discrimination or racism, I just, in the moment, I don't get angry about it. Sometimes I just, like, I go in shock and I just laugh, and I'm just like, wow, this is where I live. But at the same time, everywhere you go in the world, there is some sort or some form of discrimination. But when I say the West has faults with based majority of the things going on in the world, is because I guess I read, and I guess I look into things that some people may think it's BS. I guess I look into history that makes sense to me. For example, World War II, we learned about it, but did we ever learn that soldiers in the front line were majority Caribbean and Indians, we did not learn about that. I feel like you'll be denying your own history if you, I guess, don't acknowledge what you've done. For example, slavery back in Iran, I mean, my parents can be like, yeah, unfortunately, that was just so normal. I'm just like, yeah. But for me, I have feelings, even as a kid. If I saw something wrong, I'd be like, that is wrong. That makes me upset. You have a conscience. You know what's right or wrong. So I feel like for something being so normal, I guess it would have to be your denying it to make it normal. And I feel like if you trace that back, you probably know you're not doing the right thing, if that makes sense. I don't know if I'm making a lot of sense right now.
I'd be curious to hear about your campaign on Black Iranians. Because I noticed that at the height of the Black Lives Matter movement in the US and in the UK, you did a lot of campaigning for Black Iranians in Iran. I'd be very interested to know more about them, where they live, what is the percentage of the population, and how disenfranchised are they, or are they even disenfranchised?
So I think the funny thing is, before even Black Lives Matter, I talked about Black Lives a lot as well. And I think it was interesting for me to, I'm not surprised, but obviously because of Black Lives Matter, the movement this year, I think my work's sort of getting, I reposted the work I made before. And it's just like, wow, why is it taking this long for things to be noticed, for information, Black beauty to be noticed? The movement really, I think, sparked this initiative and this this feel for some people that I feel like should have been there a long time ago. I think the Black Collective for Iranians, their work is amazing and they talk about so much. I'm so thankful to be working with them. They're literally my second family. They are such amazing souls, such beautiful people, like the warmest people ever. And I think in Iran, this is what the collective have said, and historians have said. I think they said in the 1800s, Tehran reported that at least 2.5% of the entire city population was Black. So right now, where I live in Iran, Shahrshahr is basically a town outside of Isfahan, where majority of southern people live because of the Iran and Iraq war. Everyone from Abadan and Isfahan, and I think Junub kind of moved towards the central areas. So my family moved to Shahrshahr, which is basically a town 50 minutes outside of Isfahan. And I see a lot of Black people there. I see a lot of southern people there, and it's just such a warm place to be. And it's such, like, takes me back to the South. And I think it's just so important that people see this beauty and feel this warmth. When you talk to people in Iran about, oh yeah, we have Black people, we have Afghans, we have this, they just be like, no, we're all Iranian, I don't know. And then some guy even messaged me saying, no one in Iran is Black or brown, we're all white, we're all Aryan. These are the type of people that live in our country, and these are the type of mentalities we're trying to change.
I think it's like when you live in the North, so I'm originally from the North, I had never seen a Black person, a Black Iranian in that region. In Tehran, I had sometimes when there was a tourist. So I think people have this, you know, they don't necessarily, unless they go South, they wouldn't necessarily see. And I suppose the common stereotypical image that you have of Iran is not that of a Black Iranian. So I feel like they have definitely been left out of the frame. And in a way, when you take away someone's visibility, you also take away their voice. But how do they feel about that? You know, you have spoken, you mentioned about the collective that you have. What is their stories? How did they come into Iran? Are they indigenous, or were they brought with the coming of Islam? What is the story that many of us don't know about Black Iranians?
So the story, I guess, is that during the Qajar times, there was a lot of migration between Zanzibar to south of Iran. I know that UK used to give presents to Iran. For example, the presents would be slaves. And this is not a beautiful history at all. This is not something, I mean, when people talk about the Qajar times, I'm just like, yeah, it was cute, it was diverse. For example, I know being with a woman or being with a man, I mean, being gay or lesbian back in Qajar times was something so normal. And I think before different religions came in, and Iran had its own diversity, but this section of history was something, when I look back, I just feel so disappointed by, and I feel like so angry towards. And it's something that we should acknowledge, that this has happened, and the amazing, beautiful Black Iranians that live there today should be acknowledged as beautiful, and should be acknowledged a part of the Iranian culture. You can be Iranian and you can be Black. You can be Black and Iranian. It's something that we need to learn. It's something that we need to accept and amplify, and just look at it with all art and beauty. This is the history we've made. And listen, you have to pay for the consequences. And I feel like I always say that Iranians need to pay. This sounds so bad, but I was like, yeah, Iran needs to pay for what they've done. Like, this was not right. You're some Black people in Iran, their ancestors have struggled so much. And I was like telling my parents, I was like, there needs to be some form of, I don't like, know, consequence.
There needs to be reparations for them. Yeah.
And sometimes I feel so angry, like when I go to Esfahan and I see someone put, this is a whole different topic, when someone puts Haji Fuduz on the table.
Oh no.
Like, this, like, it just feels so wrong. Even when I go to Iran, people like to point out that I'm dark. Like, I'm not even a Black Iranian. So for me, if people point that out, I can only imagine how hard it might be for darker skinned colored people in Iran. So I feel like central Iran has always not seeing the beauty of darkness, and it's something they should see and acknowledge, you know.
In terms of ethnicity, are they majority Arab, Persian? In terms of religion, are they?
I think it's a mixture of everything, to be honest. I know that obviously southern Iran has a lot of Arabs, because my mum's Abadani and parts of my family speak Arabic back in Abadan. I mean, it was a thing that was normal because the border was there. But the Black people, I think it was a mixture of them being from Iraq, but there was also a mixture of them coming from Africa and being a descent from either, I don't know, East Africa. I mean, there are some from Nigeria. So it was a whole mix. And then when you go to Bushehr and go a little bit more down Iran, you see that a lot more, even Kish. But it's interesting. I think one thing I wanted to point out, I say, like, Iran, Central Iran isn't as educated, and I mean, it hasn't seen, you know, more dark skinned colored people. But what's funny is that when I went to Tehran, I went to a salon and this girl had braids, like literal proper braids in her hair. And I asked her, I was like, oh, why did you get braids? And she was like, oh, because Kim Kardashian has braids. I was like, okay, so you guys can't see Black people, but you can see Kim Kardashian.
Just this final question, because I'm conscious of the time. There's so much to talk about, but And I hate to jump on a large topic like this just abruptly and give you, like, what, 2 minutes to say what you want to say. But, like, take your time. I was really interested. You mentioned to me on Instagram that you are an Arab Iranian, which I find so fascinating. I just want to know what your experience has been like. In terms of, and I presume that you also come from the Sunni sect, but, like, what has the experience been like in terms of religion, belonging?
I mean, my family likes to acknowledge that they're Iranian, like, not, like, they don't have any, like, Arab in them whatsoever. I guess my family tries to not acknowledge it, but I think my parents don't like to acknowledge the Arabness in them at all, which is interesting. And being from Abadan, I guess it's something very interesting, because when you move to central and you kind of move up, you kind of like to be like, yeah, I'm full Iranian. And people in Abadan probably are, it's half half, but the influence of Arab culture was defo there, and I feel it within me as well. I do consider myself as Iranian majority, but I mean, I guess my mum doesn't like it, my family doesn't like the fact that they have to, I guess, say that they're from Abadan. They like saying they're from Abadan, but they don't like the saying, oh yes, we also take in Arab culture as well. I guess I don't like that. I don't know if it's because of the history and stuff, or I mean, the proudness of being Iranian.
I mean, I mean, I don't really blame them in a way, because there is great kind of thorough anti-Arab sentiment. I remember when I was in Tehran and I was wearing chador on this one occasion, actually a few occasions. I love that. I just thought it was so like, yeah, anyway, that's a whole different conversation. But like, I remember someone tried to like insult me by saying, oh, look, we have an Arab here. And I took it as a compliment because it was my first time going to Iran in like a long time. And I was like, oh my gosh, do I look like Dempsey Etram? Or like, you know, I took it as such a compliment. And like the person was shook. They were like, is she okay? Why is she happy about this? But then later I realized that, gee, like there is huge anti-Arab sentiment in Iran, at least in 100%. Some parts of it.
Anti-Arab, anti-Afghan. But when you take a step back and zoom out of Iran, you're like, whoa, this country is full of different cultures and full of different people. But still, we've got some people in central denying everything. I mean, I love being Southern. I love having Arab roots. I even have African roots, if you go way back. I love being diverse, and I love being me. And I'm not gonna deny my DNA, you know? Some of my family members may, but I'm not gonna. I love Arabic music. I love Egyptian music. I love Moroccan music. North African music is my life. I feel connected to it. I feel like the Middle East, I feel like for me, I would love to learn fully Arabic. I would love to learn fully Kurdish, because that is my region and that is my family. And I, for respect wise and for respect for my DNA, I feel like I should acknowledge it and learn more about it, even if it's learning a language. Because that is who I am. And I, you know what, some people don't in Iran don't like being looked at, or like, for example, when people from the south move to central, they don't like being like, they don't like people knowing that they're from the south. But when literally, I love it. I love how my skin color shows that I'm from the south, and my features. Like, I remember I was walking in Iran with my cousin, and then a guy comes up and like, ooh, Ahvazi girl, Ahvazi girl. Like, I'm from Abadan, but the fact that they acknowledge that I am Southern, it makes me happy. But I know for some people it's not that at all.
I mean, I love the energy, and I think what we need today in this world is people coming forward as they are, as authentically as they can, because that's how you actually can shift things and can change the perspective. Given that we have reached our time limit and you probably have to rush off, just final question. As a cultural mediator and an activist, what are the next steps?
The next steps is just to continue with what I'm doing, and I hope the people around me continue to do what they're doing, just educating through creativity. And I've got so many big dreams in my head that I hope to accomplish one day, and I feel like if I do that, then I know I will influence a lot more people than I am now. I just pray that we keep going, inshallah. We keep moving. The Middle East holds each other's hands, you know. I hope that one day, I don't know, I guess the Middle East can sit with each other and acknowledge each other's beauties. And I hope the Middle East can feel more educated. And I hope that we can gain our power back and we can gain our beauty back.
Yeah, and I hope that we can see within our lifetime the disintegration of Middle East reverse itself.
Yeah.
And that they can finally find common ground. I mean, actually, there's plenty of common ground. It's just that. And that's that, folks. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please give the Muslim Takeaway a follow on Twitter at Muslim Takeaway, and on Instagram, you can follow me at I am Anna Diamond. Anna is with one N. And if you want to follow Sahar and see what she'll be up to next, follow her on Instagram. She can be found at Sahar_Qureshi.x. In this episode, we touched on a lot of topics, from first generation migration experience to the Black Lives Matter and the Black Iranians Collective. And so, yeah, next week I will be inviting over someone very, very special. So please join me then too. So stay safe, my friends, and I'll see you next week.